This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
This work is a result of an Australian Research Council grant, and it's led by Deirdre Tedmondson and Professor Bobby Banerjee. And these are our industry partners. And Puketuk Community Council, you may know as Ernabella. Just to locate the area, we're very close to the Northern Territory border, and the homelands are within about a 50-kilometre radius of Ernabella. Some of the information sources, I think Peter would qualify as someone who filled all the sectors in John's hybrid economy, a very able man. Palipacha Tiger has just been a book released on his experiences as a shearer in the community, and I've been fortunate enough to get a number of images from the Arairicha collection, which is Anangu controlled, and they've now created a subcategory just on enterprise. And of course, Bill Edwards, former superintendent of the mission, Mike Last, agricultural advisor, and also a very interesting DVD, Men of the Mulga, which I have with me, provides a fascinating insight into mission life 57 years ago. And the other authors, as you see there. Pre-contact, of course, life involved making weapons, fire stick farming, hunting small animals, gathering bush tucker, protecting rock holes, building wilches. It was a very well-defined kinship system and rules for sharing food. And the main characteristic, of course, was very high mobility. So Anangu could move around and make the most of the seasons. And they spent their spare time expanding their social networks. And what caused them to leave for places like the mission? Well, of course, there was gold that had been found nearby. I think there were 73 different intrusions just looking for gold in a period from 1896 to 1931. Of course, cattlemen, explorers, and missionaries. There were also severe droughts, competition with pastoralists for water, also early settlers wanting Aboriginal women, pressure applied to keep people away from Uluru, to limit contact with tourists. Of course, the well-documented violence of some of the early settlers, the use and control of Aboriginal labour, and the attraction of white man's food and hence the need to work. And then that's resulted in the missions such as Hermannsburg and Ernabella. And after the founding of the mission in 1937 by Dr. Toogood, one of the main things that was traded was, in fact, a dingo scalps following on from Pam's paper, where she mentioned people coming from Western Australia to the mission. People worked as shepherds and shearers, in cattle mustering, cooks and bakers, milking goats and building. And so I'll just run through some of the images that come from the Arairicha Library. See people building a massive rainwater tank there and working on some of the small buildings. They're also involved in gardening. There was their own butchery there. Very involved in teaching and nursing. And of course, craft work was pretty dominant. I think it just celebrated recently the 60th anniversary of Ernabella Arts Centre. So that's, I think, the longest continuous Aboriginal art centre in the country. And Winifred Hilliard had an enormous influence when she arrived. And this is some of the beautiful rugs that have been made. That's in the 50s. That garden there is looking pretty productive. Wish I had one like that. Just looking at shearing, which is one of the main occupations, Pally Putchett Tiger's book talks about his story and how he and his wife worked as shepherds and then he as a shearer later on. Annabella had quite a number of sheep, 3,000 to 4,000 sheep, with flocks up to 600 around the various wells within that 50-kilometre radius of the mission. And each night, of course, they had to be secured and yarded to protect them from the dingoes. So this is the shearing shed, the mission. And when they loaded the bales up, they were then transported 300 kilometres to Fink, which is the then rail terminal, and they'd do an exchange there and pick up building material and food to take back to the community. So at one point in time, they were, I guess you could say, virtually self-sufficient, but of course not getting the wage that the rest of the community were getting. Just looking at employment off the lands, there are a number of different sources of that. One was, of course, working on the cattle, the big cattle stations, and the other one was shearing. There's also chrysoprase mining in WA, just over the border in Wingelina, and men would spend a week collecting samples. I think in the 90s that was selling for $1,000 a kilogram, so quite a valuable resource. And Bill Edwards has written about the fruit picking in the Riverland. He, in his estimation, it was successful. It was a very brief period, and people were certainly helped both before they left and while they were there to make sure that it went well, but he, in his view, quite successful. I haven't been able to speak to any of the community about that. Looking at some of the enterprise work in the 70s, of course, water drilling was a critical activity, and one of the local people, local Anangu, was able to run his own business. Ginger Wickery established a 4-acre fruit and veggie garden with a little bit of assistance from government. Peter Nunnaju obtained a loan and repaid that very quickly and was producing 100 loaves a day. Simon was making quite a decent profit margin on his petrol. I think some of the retailers down here would be happy with that. There was a good sewing and fabric business, and the craft work was expanding, and three women, in fact, travelled to Indonesia in 1974 to learn batik dyeing, and they were involved with exhibitions all over the country. And in your own museum here, of course, there's a superb display of work from the community. They were also the first Aboriginal community to broadcast its own video show, so they were pioneers in a number of ways. And this shows our driller, hard at it. There's Peter Nunnaju, looking a lot younger than I know him now. He's close to 80, and producing the daily bread there, and some of the traditional designs from the local community. Now, Mike Last on the Waru website has been able to document some of the community roles in the 70s, and unfortunately, not too many of those are still done by the community today, but you can see a huge range of roles undertaken. Everything from the office running to all the local building, running the power plant, the water reticulation, operating the garage, land management, which is still done today, many of the store functions, including the cash register, right through to community services and maintaining the roads and the airstrip. So a huge range of roles in that period. This community also was, I guess, really involved with the start of CDEP. By the early 70s, the sheep industry had become uneconomic and was being phased out, and unemployment benefits were being paid to some in the community. And they, in fact, wrote to the minister in Canberra and raised their concerns of inadequate funding being provided for their employment programs, and as a result, he took notice and began to develop the concept of the CDEP, which we know today. And Annabella was chosen as a pilot for the introduction of CDEP on the lands. Just looking at the challenges ahead, of course, we've got the changes to CDAP, issues around long-term welfare dependence, and, of course, Anangu feel that they have lost control over many of the key roles in the community, both to white people and increasingly Maori, surprisingly. there's a lack of business and community facilities, but on a positive side, the entrepreneurial spirit remains for many in the community. I'm involved in this project in helping to nurture some of the small enterprises instigated by the community. And these are some of the areas that we're involved with at the moment: tourism, recycled clothing, vehicle recycling, and soaps and hand creams. And Mike Last makes an interesting contention that the quality of employment programs operating in a community strongly reflects the quality of life in a community. I think I'd have to endorse that. And just to end on a positive note, that's my favourite shot of the lands from Mount Woodruff, about 10 kilometres from Peter's homeland. So I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronald. Thanks, that was really interesting. I was just wondering if you knew the extent to which Annabella facilitated itinerant employment for people from other communities that were coming and visiting. I know that there were a lot of people moving back and forth during the late 50s, early 60s from Warburton to Annabella. And were they kind of incorporated in sort of a casual way into the enterprises that were at Annabella?
That's not something that I've come across too much. There was quite a bit of movement, as you say, to Western Australia, to Warburton. And, in fact, Peter's a good example. He has some traditional country over the border, and he's just as likely to be there that, as he is in Annabella or at a some mission event in Darwin. So he's very hard to track down despite his age and, you would think, limited mobility. He can be everywhere.
I just wondered, is your main informant Peter Nunanya?
Sorry?
Is your main informant for this project Peter Nunanya? You seem to be...
Oh, no, he's one of our partners. There's right. There's three others, yes.
So
I've mentioned him in particular, but I think because he exemplifies to me the hybrid economy model that John Altman was talking about, so that's one of the reasons I picked him out. But no, there are three other partners.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I just wonder if you could make any comment about the impact of Umuwa as a service centre in relation to service provision in Annabella.
It could be a bit controversial. Yeah, it's Canberra on the land, isn't it? Yeah, it's difficult for me to make a judgment, having been a former bureaucrat. I guess I better be a little bit careful, but I think it performs a role. I mean, there are a number of central functions that need to be run up there, and there does need to be a centre such as Umuwa. Whether it's run in the right way and whether all the right services are there is debatable. I think I'll leave that one open. But there are more that perhaps could be based there. For example, CDEP is run through Bungala and Port Augusta. And you would think, why wouldn't they have an office in Umuwa to at least be close to the people?
I'll just follow up with Pam's point about the relationship between Annabella and Warburton. I think that in your work that's a really important link, yes, that you need to make the relationship or the amount of movement between those two missions,
yes,
but also the ethos of employment that was generated at Annabella was also linked to those other missions and the relationship between the Do-Goods and also Mount Margaret Mission and Mary Montgomery Bennett and the beginning of Annabella Arts, that it's steeped in a whole approach to employment that is very drawn from the United Aborigines Mission as well.
Thanks for that.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.